Artists like Meghan Trainor, Post Malone, and the Pussycat Dolls are canceling shows and in some cases whole tours in what is being dubbed Blue Dot Fever.
The concept was named in relation to the sea of blue dots, or empty seats, an attendee would see when going to buy a ticket at a show not selling well.
However, leadership at the top ticket sales websites are pushing back, claiming sales and cancellations are happening at a normal rate.
So, what is the truth behind the potential spread of blue dot fever?
And could a shift towards smaller markets and venues help ticket sales? I'm Jason Acuna.
And I'm Sarah Morrison.
And this is Unbothered by WFSU Public Media. Hey, Sarah.
Hi, Jason.
So, are you planning on going to a lot of concerts this summer?
Yes, I have a few concerts on the books, but I have to say I am not going to as many this summer as I did in summers past.
Yeah, that definitely seems to be the case going around, whether it's because of the economy or because of gas prices and the travel that usually comes with going to concerts. It seems like a lot of people are being a little bit more choosy with what concerts they choose to go to. And that has kind of caused seemingly some shockwaves throughout the live music industry, as a lot of larger artists are having to either modify their tours or cancel their tours because of low ticket sales. At least that's what it seems to fans and those that are watching this news kind of roll out from the artists. However, one of the executives from Live Nation was quoted as saying that it was basically absolutely devoid of facts and that ticket sales and cancellations in terms of shows are on par, if not doing a little bit better than they have been in years past, with Live Nation specifically reporting 107 million tickets sold for 2026 events through April, which is up 11% according to their data. But that doesn't change the fact that a lot of people are noticing that their favorite artists or some of their favorite artists are just not selling as well as they have in years past.
Yeah, I have noticed that a lot of artists that my friends and I were looking forward to seeing this summer have been dropping shows left and right. And living in Tallahassee, you have to strategize which concerts to see because there's always travel involved. So it's kind of a bummer to see someone that we were all looking forward to watching perform drop, especially Florida shows and shows in our area. So it seems to me that blue dot fever might be a real thing, but I want to know for sure.
Yeah, so do I. And so I actually spoke with an expert who's been following the concept and ticket sales in general for quite a while in order to get to the bottom of what's going on and if this figurative blue dot fever is spreading or if we just need to take the temperature again.
Hi, I'm my name is Dave Clark, and I'm a senior writer with Ticket News, which is a publication covering the ticketing business and live entertainments as a whole.
Absolutely, Dave. Well, thank you so much for being here with us. We're going to have a great conversation on this topic, and I'm just going to go ahead and jump right in. So based on what you've been seeing, can you give us a general definition for what people might be describing as blue dot fever?
Sure. So blue dot fever is a very clever term coined for something that is certainly not new in ticketing and live entertainment, but it's just the idea of demand not being for a certain event where the seller and the performer had hoped. So sales are not going so well, and the performance either is going to have a weaker audience or might be postponed or canceled outright. And the blue dot piece is, if you've ever looked at, for example, if Ticketmaster is the ticket box office of record, which is the case on so many prominent venues across North America and the world these days, they indicate unsold primary inventory as blue dots on the seat manifest. So if you pull up an event and you see like barely anything lit up at all or mostly red seats, then that's not blue dot fever. But if it's a sea of blue dots, that means sales are not going very well. And I think that was the was it the New York Post that coined that? I forget, but whoever it was a very clever way of expressing something that does seem to be trending these days.
Yeah, especially since it seems that a lot of artists weren't necessarily, if a lack of sales was the reason for postponing or canceling tours, weren't necessarily being as forthright with that as the reason as they could have been coming up with potentially true or slightly true, who knows, reasons for moving their tour or canceling shows. So I can see kind of where the term comes into that. But just to back up a bit, could you give us a brief look into how the modern ticket sales process works for live shows?
Sure. You know, for concerts in particular, the way that it typically works is, you know, you have the promoter or the, you know, team's management will announce that the tour is happening. They'll, you know, give everybody the breathless description of the new thing. It depends on if they have new music coming out or if they have some other reason to kind of hang the logic for why they're going on tour. And then they will announce the on sales dates, whatever their pre-sales process is, which usually is, you know, there'll be an on sale date that is typically 1 or 2 weeks out from the announcement of the tour to give people enough time to sort of respond to it and make their plans. Then you will have the pre-sales, which are going to happen in the 3 to 5 days prior to the general on sale date, which then, you know, there's obviously various affinity groups that you can be a part of depending on the performer, but, you know, mostly local venues will have pre-sales that are password protected. A lot of credit card companies will have, you know, access, you know, Amex is famous for it. You know, I know T-Mobile and Verizon have big, you know, affinity groups that have pre-sale access to certain tours. So there's these different tranches of tickets that are set aside for these pre-sales. And then typically it's, you know, just a rolling set of sales going on for these small groups leading up to the general sale. And, you know, the way that it's usually marketed is like, oh, the demand is super high and everybody's super excited. And nope, these tickets went away in a heartbeat and there's bots and brokers and everybody's grabbing it. And it's a huge problem. Mm-hmm. Is typically the marketing, because part of the marketing these days is marketing as if the demand is outrageously high. And whether or not that's the case is something that the consumer isn't really going to know until down the road, because usually, you know, the on sales process involves a sellout or some amount of tickets not being available for people that are buying it or interested in buying it, you know, particularly for high profile tours. Like, you know, we've seen stuff certainly with, you know, the most recent major example is the Taylor Swift, you know, Eras Tour was kind of the thing that created such a huge conversation around ticketing because it was such a messy system and so many people tried to get tickets and couldn't and everybody was so upset. Mm-hmm. You know, it has led to congressional attention and lawsuits, but certainly most high profile on sales just have some aspect of that. And then what we really see is that there's only a percentage, even pre-sale allocations and other things of that nature, and then general sale, there's still a lot of tickets. Whether or not they claim it's sold out at that point, there's still typically a lot of tickets that have gone unsold because marketing the scarcity is such an enormous piece of the puzzle these days in how these tours are sold. So what's interesting about this Blue Dot Fever, you know, question is a lot of times you will see tours that are marketed as if they have been very high demand that down the road, it becomes obvious that that demand wasn't really there, but it was just a marketing tactic in order to try to sell tickets or try to sell tickets at a higher price point than, you know, they otherwise might have. And for the consumer, it's really frustrating because you genuinely don't know whether or not a tour is as hot as they say it is, and you need to buy the tickets at whatever the, you know, platinum price or whatever is available, or on resale at whatever price is available there, or if there's going to be, you know, 2/3 of the room is actually unsold and you just don't know about it until like a week out from the show when all of a sudden there's a whole lot more blue dots showing up in the seat map.
And so what are some of the root causes of what is being described as blue dot fever? Is it an actual fall in demand, or is it part of this process that seems pretty complicated with these holdbacks and things like that? Is that playing into blue dot fever? What's causing this?
Well, I think it's a bit of both. Certainly, I don't think anybody would be able to argue against the idea that coming out of the COVID pandemic and the shutdown or, capping of live events in terms of how many people could be there or what tours were happening, because of either local regulations or just, social distancing rules or things of that nature, there was very obviously a lot of pent up demand and an interest in these communal spaces and this concert experience and this live event experience, because, even for people that weren't like diehard go to a concert once or twice a month types, being pent up for 3, 6, 9 months or not able to go to anything for a long time, like there was that desire. And certainly the ticketing and concert industry saw a huge surge in like people buying tickets and shows selling out. And, the prices got very high, both on primary marketplace where the promoter was moving prices up because the demand was high enough, and secondary where, people were able to say, well, if I'm going to try and go to this show, I can buy, like I got in through the, the queue, the waiting list, whatever. And like, I'm just going to buy six because I might be able to finance my two tickets that I want to use for myself and my partner, and sell the other four. And now I am making back more than enough for what I paid for it. And I can, pay for our hotel cost. So the industry saw a tremendous amount of that kind of behavior and prices spiraling. And then, inevitably, that's not going to be sustainable forever. So I think part of this is the prices were moved up in such a way based on that, real big bubble of demand and that surge. And now you're starting to see the demand falling off, not just for second and third tier acts that are touring without new music or things like that, but in general, where people are just like, well, not everybody's Taylor Swift, not everybody's Harry Styles. And even like Harry Styles, his residency that he's, got going on in a couple of different places, and he's got so many shows in some of these places, I wouldn't be surprised to see a lot of inventory coming back onto the market down the road for these that, based on just the prices they were charging and the fact that, what are they playing at MSG? Like 15, 20 shows, I forget, but it's an awful lot of seats to fill. So I wouldn't be surprised to see, that be another example of not so much Blue Dot Fever where it's at any risk of cancellation, but there just being a lot more inventory unsold than they would let on at this point, because that's part of how the game is played.
Absolutely. And Harry Styles is a great example because he really did benefit from that kind of post-lockdown, everybody went out and wanted to go do a bunch of things, and that's right when his tour was for his last album. And so it will be very interesting to see if that demand that he saw, a year or two ago maintains at the same level, especially since he'll be in one location rather than going on a large tour.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, it's for some acts, it's just whether or not they priced too aggressively or they were talked into it by their management that, well, XYZ is, doing this for their tour, we should do that ourselves. I think also a big part of it is that the compensation model of, the concert industry and live music and music in general has really become so inverted in the last 20, 30 years compared to the way that it had been historically, where in the past, the way that I've heard it described is that the tours were mounted in order to sell the records, because the monetization for that business was in the sales of singles and in the sales of albums and in the sales of the music itself and the publishing rights. Right. That was where the artists made their money. So they would go out and tour to generate interest and go into markets and try to get people to buy their albums based on seeing them in person. Now, because of streaming and because of, all the way back into Napster, since that time, since really the late 90s, early 2000s, with the internet really taking hold and the way that the business is built now, instead of selling singles, and obviously like big acts are going to be able to monetize their sales. Taylor Swift is going to sell 5 versions of everything because people are going to buy it. But for the average right. performer, that just doesn't exist anymore. So the monetization has flipped over to now they are earning most of their life income through the sale of tickets for these events rather than the, album sales and the publishing and the licensing of music. So for most, performers, that's their livelihood. So of course prices are going to go up, and that sort of thing is because they need to make their income off of that rather than selling albums, because the album sales business model just doesn't exist in the way that it did.
Are we seeing the cost of putting on a tour rise at the same rate as tickets are for both kind of the artist and the venue? Or is it more expensive to put on a tour in comparison to the ticket prices?
So, I'm certainly not an expert in this part of the business, but everything that I've seen backs that up, where, the cost of staging a show in most venues is higher. Obviously, and I can only imagine what this summer is going to look like in particular because of how outrageous the fuel costs are right now. So if you're talking about doing a tour and moving any bit of like your staging equipment from city to city, like not all tours do that, but certainly the bigger ones do.
Absolutely.
There was a lot of coverage of how Taylor Swift, gave all of her truck drivers these insane bonuses because of how much money the tour had made and stuff like that. Well, a tour at that scale and a lot of these big pop star tours and things of that nature, when they're going city to city, it's a massive entourage, and you're moving all that stuff. You're dealing with hotel costs for all that stuff, and all of those things have gone up. So there's no question that the cost of putting on a tour has gone up. And there's also, an increased recognition of the fact that the way that the entertainment business is structured at a high level right now is these massive corporations putting on these tours as the promoters and venue rights holders and things of that nature. And, just look at what happened in the Live Nation Ticketmaster antitrust trial. It's like there was an actual discussion of how much just that business model is designed to funnel money towards these corporations. And, there's all kinds of ways that they can add costs and, boost ancillary revenue for themselves and do all this kind of stuff. So all of it is getting more expensive across the board, both the cost of doing business and the way that these businesses and these touring production companies are designed to extract money from, the consumer and the artist. So there's a lot of that. So part of, a big part of why the ticket prices are going up is based on the actual just logistics and the need for more revenue in order to drive this engine. But it is also, I think, a recognition of, well, if XYZ is charging this price, we might as well try it. And sometimes that's just not going to work, depending on what the demand actually is for either a specific city on a tour or a tour overall, which is why you start to see this Blue Dot Fever stuff.
Right. And are we seeing a lack of sales across all of the entertainment industry, specifically the live entertainment industry? Or is this affecting, b smaller acts more so than bigger acts, or larger cities more so than smaller cities? Or is it universal?
So, for better or for worse, it's kind of hard to know until the day of a show happens, or you start to see stuff where, you might be able to see if a tour is performing poorly or a specific stop is performing poorly on a case-by-case basis, starting like a couple weeks out, because that's when, if the promoter has been hiding a lot of unsold ticket inventory in order to stimulate FOMO purchases by making it look like the room is sold out, you can only hide that so long before you have to start like just trying to move whatever you can. So you will start to see like two for one deals showing up on local Groupon sites for these different cities. You'll start to see, different, offers for cheap lawn seats if it's an amphitheater show and stuff like that. I think it's happening somewhat across the board, but the for better or for worse, the way that this business is designed is you do the price, like the promoters understand, and it seems like it's the accepted practice now, where if you price the tickets to what amounts to what you might see on like a resale marketplace from the jump. So like if instead of like the tour used to sell the tickets at $50 a piece, and then the small number of them that would get resold would be sold for $100 to $200. Now you're going to see the tour priced at $200 a piece, And if you sell even 25% of the room at that price, and then you have to backdoor, two for one deal everything as the event comes up in order to fill the seats, you've still made more money that way as the promoter or the venue. The problem is if you get too far down the road, like I think the best way to put it is the bigger acts can kind of make that work because there is enough actual demand. They just need to maybe slash the prices to find the people that are less interested in buying that are like, well, I'll go and see Kesha for $20 or whatever.
Right.
But if you've got, like some of the tours that got canceled and whether or not they were transparent about the reasoning, it's like, well, if this person hasn't put out new music in a number of years and they did this tour and it was selling poorly, and then all of a sudden it's a month out from the show and there's still like 90% of the seats unsold, you can't cut prices enough to move that amount of one venue. So I think it's more, you'll see the slower interest acts canceling or postponing tours more often than a big tour. But it's certainly not something that is anybody is immune to if they are too aggressive with this. And like I said before, and obviously like what you've seen, like the executives from companies like Live Nation sort of dismissing this out of hand as like, well, it's only this tiny percentage of tours that are getting canceled or anything of that nature. But it's true. These are things that have always happened historically. There's always been tours that have sold poorly, and then some kind of reason is cooked up to explain why it's canceled or postponed. Usually, it's easy to tell if you actually look at, what the demand was. Like, well, that tour, like that person says they're sick. Honestly, they probably aren't, but it's like, what are you going to question whether or not they don't feel well and they have to cancel a tour? Like, sure.
Right.
So it's just a like this is a thing that has always happened. It's just a question of like, is it happening more this year than historically? Maybe. And we aren't really going to know for another couple of months because we'll only see this accelerate if it's really as bad as some people's perception is right now. Or we could just see like, a handful of low interest tours canceled and then the summer goes on as everybody expected and everybody makes money and everybody's happy except for fans that are, paying $500 on average a person.
Right. And so this next question might be a little bit theoretical in nature, but would some of these larger to mid-size acts that are having to postpone or cancel their shows due to low demand, would they possibly see better sales if they moved the cities they're touring in from the largest cities in each state to maybe, the smaller to mid-size city where not as many concerts, especially larger acts, come through as often? Would they maybe see better sales if they were more of an event in the city they were performing in?
It's certainly possible. I mean, I think that is probably going to really vary greatly depending on the act, because one performer might have almost no interest in a more rural audience that's further away from a population center or a major city, whereas someone might have quite a lot, and by going to some place that they maybe haven't gone in years, or like, oh, we're skipping Brooklyn this year. We're skipping MSG, but we're gonna go to Cleveland because we haven't been there in a decade. Certainly is a strategy that could work. I think the biggest thing is, tours and performers recognizing like whether or not they need to like right size the room that they're playing in more so than the specific location. I
Right.
think the best example I would say is like looking at the Black Keys, who had a tour, I think 3 years ago, perhaps, I forget, but some it post-pandemic, but they were looking at playing like big arenas, standard size like NBA size arenas in major cities across the US. And they wound up canceling their tour just because, and they were fairly transparent about it. Like they got talked into playing these big rooms and charging these ticket prices, and it just wasn't a model that was working for the demand that they had. Because I think they hadn't released any new music, or they hadn't released any new music that was really like a big seller in a number of years. And they just bit off more than they could chew in terms of the kind of rooms they were trying to play. So then they kind of went back to the drawing board, canceled stuff, and then I believe they went back out either that same year or perhaps the following year and just looked at more theater level, smaller venue stuff that sort of right-sized the amount of interest they had to be able to perform was in these smaller facilities because you can put the show on for a little bit less money. You don't need to sell as many tickets to break even. So I think whether or not a performer could do well by rerouting into different markets is probably going to be really dependent on the individual act and where their audience is. Because for lack of a better, LA and New York are going to have a lot of fans of any artist, and same with Chicago, same with any major population center. If you start getting into these secondary, tertiary cities, it's going to be more dependent on where that artist's audience is. And, I will imagine that based on streaming and stuff like that, the promoters and the artist management have those data points and should be able to sort of determine that. So the question is that a artist not wanting to make that move because it's a personal pride of point, a point of pride to be touring and hitting Manhattan and hitting, LA, hitting the Staples Center or whatever, even if it's a reach in terms of what you might be able to demand in terms of the sales that would justify the cost of putting on a show in that venue, or would they be better going to these smaller cities, these other places? It's really going to depend on if their data says that they have an audience there that would be interested in buying tickets for that, even if it's only the first time they've been there in 10 years.
Yeah, 100%. And something that I thought was really interesting that happened, I think, towards the end of last year, especially when you compare it to kind of the Pussycat Dolls that canceled their tour and were honest about the fact that it was due to low ticket sales. And there was the All American Rejects, which was a band, if for the audience that doesn't know that, that was very popular in the 2000s, and had kind of waned in popularity recently. They did these kind of pop-up shows that I believe were free for most of the people who attended, where they would announce that they were basically either A, playing in somebody's backyard or playing in this very small venue an hour or two before they would show up, and then everyone could just come and see them for free. And then after doing that for a little while, they did release an album and announce a tour, and it seems that they kind of created their own buzz in that kind of way and made it seem like they just loved to perform. So I just thought that was really interesting to kind of look at those two different acts that were popular around the same time, and they took two very different routes for kind of having a, reunion or going back on tour for the first time in a while.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot to be said for actually generating grassroots interest and excitement in your fan base rather than, I don't want to accuse anybody of anything, but consumers by and large can feel like if this is a cynical cash grab kind of a thing, if you're going out on this tour and there's no reason for it, but you're still expecting people to pay, $150 for the back row of the nosebleeds. And it's like, well, I saw you after the last time you put an album out and your prices were 60% less for the same part of the stadium. There's no new music. Why am I excited about this? As opposed to turning it around, like you said, and generating an actual buzz and sort of getting people excited. Like, oh, this makes me feel in a way like when this band had just come out and I was a little younger and I have this excitement and this interest in this thing that I would like to see them again, as opposed to, oh, they're touring. I guess I'm a fan of theirs. I should go and see it. And now the prices are XYZ and it's this much of a hassle to buy tickets. It's a tough economic climate in general too. I mean, I think the thing I don't think we've touched on too, but I don't know about you, but I feel as if everything that I am shopping for or have to pay for anywhere for anything has gotten 20 to 50% more expensive in the last 2 or 3 years.
Oh, at
Um,
least.
and there's just not as much disposable income for the average person for anything. And concerts, for lack of a better term, are always going to be a discretionary, luxury expense for most people. And whether or not the concert industry is spending too much of its time marketing to whales that can afford these $2,500 meet and greet fan packages, versus the person who, like, it's their one night out for the year and they're really excited just to be in the room. It's tough to say, but you know, I give credit to the people that put these things on. They're going to figure this out. Fair enough. It's just a question of, is this Blue Dot Fever thing a blip, or is it going to be a summer long story? And we're going to find out in the next couple of months.
Absolutely. We will see. Well, Dave, before I let you go, is there anything else that we didn't talk about that you think is important for the audience to know in terms of this concept or issue?
Well, I mean, I think the biggest thing for any consumer who is interested in seeing a live event, don't necessarily fall for the immediate hype as soon as the show is announced, that if you don't buy tickets during day one of the presale, you're not going to be able to get them. A lot of times, you might actually see the highest prices in that first week of the show, or excuse me, in that first week of the sale. And then if you just wait it out, usually there's going to be prices that are going to be more attainable down the road, whether it's shows that have seats go up on resale when people's plans change, because you buy tickets 6 months out nowadays at, you know, and that's just how the industry works. Or if it's that the show doesn't do as well as expected, and then all of a sudden there's emails with, you know, new seats available 2 weeks out. So patience is really more important than ever. You know, get out and see shows, but you don't need to buy them the day of. A lot of times resale is going to have good deals. A lot of times the venue is going to have, you know, seats come available at the last minute. So don't panic buy at $500 a ticket, unless, you know, the number of shows that's the only way you're going to get in is effectively zero. It was really like the Eras Tour, a couple of other things, and even the Eras Tour, there were last minute tickets that popped up as production releases and things like that. So, you know, even the hottest show in the world is not going to be sold out to the day of the show. You just wait and see, and hopefully something's going to fall in your lap as far as a good price. And if not, you know, don't spend your rent money on a concert ticket. It's not worth it.
Absolutely. Well, Dave, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. We really appreciate you sharing your expertise on this. We learned a lot about what's going on, and we hope to stay in touch if anything develops this summer regarding this concept of Blue Dot Fever.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to talk. I appreciate your time.